Valentine's to the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you, Bill Jackson.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, coming down. In just a moment, we're going to talk about the big film release on Valentine's Day. But before we hit this,
I want to talk about... I heart you.
I want to talk about how the abominations go mainstream. And I know that's a toughie, but I want to talk about how it happens. I want to step back and look at the modus operandi on this edition of the program. Abominations mainstream. Back in the 1970s and 80s, some of these things were not mainstream.
No.
People weren't even talking about homosexuals gay.
Hmm.
I don't remember it. Do you?
Yeah.
1979, 1983, 1985.
85, yes.
If they were talking about it, well, it was in a closet somewhere.
The reason we were talking about it, because I worked for a ministry called the Caleb Campaign, and it was an issue that we were addressing constantly, and people, Christians specifically, said, that's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. This is never going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so this is not surprising to me. Because you could see it coming. Yeah.
The ministry for which I worked saw it coming.
Mm-hmm. Because we're working with students and it was a big deal. It is now such a big deal. I was just talking to a buddy of mine who has a ministry in rodeo. And he said
rodeo.
Yeah. Yeah. The Cowboys. Yep. And he said in that community it's a big deal.
Well, follow your arrow.
Yeah.
That's the big song that came out, Casey Musgraves, last year.
Hmm.
Yeah, she broke it into the heartland. Wow. That is the conservative, you know. And there's like still a conservative heartland in America. They're going for it, too. Floodgates open in 2014 on this one. I want to give what I call the neuronic update. Nobody's really jumped on this. I'm the only guy who calls it the neuronic agenda.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to continue.
Yeah.
Because Nero, just look it up, friends, in the encyclopedia. Read the history of Nero. You're going to find he was the guy, his namesake, for homosexual marriage. Also happens to be pretty much the worst tyrant who ever lived. Most of the Roman historians, the pagan historians, consider him to be insane. And makes perfect sense because
that is
welcome to our world.
Yeah, what is the
insanity?
Ultimate,
isn't that what we are?
What is the ultimate insanity? It's sin.
Yes.
It's embracing sin and calling evil good.
Embracing the absolute antithesis of that which is good.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. So the update on the neuronic agenda right now, friends. And this is just the last 3 months, huge changes. Man, I've crawled out of the closet. I was actually off the grid. We were beyond internet.
You had unplugged?
We were 30 miles from the nearest road. We were flown in to a remote cabin out in Alaska.
Yeah?
My son had to climb a mountain to get cell coverage.
Is that how you chewed through the duct tape? You had all that 3 months?
I did.
Through the duct tape?
I did. I know. You threw me in the cabin.
Yeah.
And I was out in the middle of nowhere for a long time.
Yeah.
But we come back into reality and the neuronic agenda has progressed. 35 states fully license same-sex marriages. 2 states partially license and 6 states have stayed rulings against in laws that were against same-sex marriage. In other words, they've stayed rulings that would have maintained a pro-family approach. 24 states rolled over in 2014. That's half the country.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty fast. That's about as fast as Roe Wade. In 1973,
and it makes sense that it would be aggressive. It would because it's been set up for a long time. This is not something that has occurred overnight. As I said, you know, back in the 80s, we were talking about this, and so this is the tipping point. You reach a tipping point,
mm-hmm.
and that was reached, I think, last year.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
Yep. Now the big question among conservatives. And Christians, is what will Justice Kennedy do? He's the swing vote on the Supreme Court because the decision has been shifted over to the Supreme Court. I believe they're going to come out with the decision this June, so it's going to be a few months out here. Here is a World Magazine article in which they take the position Kennedy will endorse same-sex marriage because of his libertarian leanings.
Mm-hmm.
He tends to be pro-free speech. So at every level, he wants to protect free speech, but he's also very, very pro immorality where he gets the opportunity to endorse it, whether it be abortion or homosexuality. Here's the article. In March 2013, when the Supreme Court heard arguments over the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, in the United States v. Windsor, only 9 states had legalized same-sex marriage, now mostly due to court rulings striking marriage laws based on the Windsor decision. Same-sex marriage is legal in 36 states.
So it's not by public opinion, or it's not by public action.
No,
by
not,
referendum,
not much.
By legislation. It is by court activism.
Although public opinion is right there at 55-45, 48-52.
Give it 2 years.
That's where it's been.
Give it 2 years, and the products of the public
right.
school system will
right.
be voting.
And the left pulls the seesaw its direction.
Mm-hmm.
And the judges are typically on the leftist end of things. They're way out on the edge of the seesaw, jumping as hard as they can to pull the entire society their direction. Well, the prospects, according to World Magazine, this is Emily Bells, I believe, the prospects for the remaining state marriage laws are not good. The signs are relatively clear given swing vote Justice Anthony Kennedy's past rulings on gay rights and the court's decisions this past fall. Over and over, the court declined emergency stays on rulings that struck down state marriage laws. In other words, they figure he was probably there. He was the swing vote on each opportunity he had to address these state laws, and he rejected it every time. So based on that evidence, and based on the fact that he voted in favor of the Windsor decision and the Lawrence v. Texas decision, based on that, it appears that Kennedy will support homosexual marriage in all 50 states. The last 4 to 5 states or whatever it is will capitulate to endorsing same-sex marriage. And we've already discussed on this program whether or not Christians should pursue marriage licenses from here on out, given that the state has pretty much abandoned any semblance of a Christian definition of marriage. Therefore, the church, I think, will become more important. The local church, local community churches will become more important. And Christian families, I think, will be more careful with how they handle the state on issues like marriage.
So if you're not going to get a marriage license, then what is the alternative? You just send a notification?
I think
there'd
be
a notification,
yeah.
Yeah.
Just letting the state know.
Yeah.
And there's different ways to do that in different states, and certainly want to leave that up to the conscience of each individual Christian. All right, now, here's the thing that struck me. These decisions are important. Let's not minimize the importance of each decision, from Roe v. Wade, Lawrence v. Texas, etc. These men are responsible for these decisions before God. And as I was thinking about this, Bill, the verse Matthew 18:7 came into my mind. Woe unto the world because of these offenses. And offenses meaning offenses.
Yep.
Really, really bad things.
Stumbling blocks.
Stumbling blocks. And in reference to this block, stumbling blocks that affect little children as well in public schools where they're being taught these things, et cetera, et cetera. Woe to the world because of these offenses, Jesus says. These horrific offenses, these stumbling blocks that are placed in front of people, these false worldviews, false views of sexuality and marriage and family and et cetera, et cetera. Woe to the world that brings these offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come. So Jesus says, these offenses will come. It's just that's the way the world is. These offenses are going to come. And then he says, Justice Anthony Kennedy needs to listen right now. I'm not sure if he's tuned in, but yet better be. But woe to that man by whom the offenses come. Now, just a huge premonition of threat, of judgment, of some of the most horrific things that could ever happen to any person are right there in those words. Something similar is said to Judas. You know, Judas, probably the arch criminal of all of history. But now Justice Kennedy up there and maybe the top 10 of the worst criminals in history in terms of what he's doing. Now, not the only one. I'm saying top 10. There's Nero and there's other black-robed justices. The point we want to make on the program is these men will be held accountable by the King of Kings, Lord of Lords, the Judge of the Earth, on these decisions.
And, you know, it's not just a Justice Kennedy. It's easy to point a finger at one person. But what nearly drove me out of teaching, I taught for 10 years in the public schools in Illinois,
mm-hmm.
was I knew the Bible well enough to know that I was not doing what I was supposed to be doing. I also knew the Bible well enough to know that the severest judgment is placed upon those
teachers.
Who mislead little ones.
Teachers.
It'd be better if the millstone were hung around my neck and I were tossed in the ocean than if I mislead the little ones. So we have a lot of those who are working alongside Justice Kennedy. Mm-hmm. They're the minions in the culture. And unfortunately, many Christians who are in the public school system who have not taken a strong stand, who have compromised, will face a severe reckoning when it comes to the result of what has been taught, what they have said. Well, I just teach what I'm taught. I have to teach this stuff.
We need to underscore.
We cannot not teach this stuff because I'll lose my job. And that's the sad part of this.
Bill, so we need to underscore the fact these are the words of Jesus Christ. These are red letters for those of you collecting red letters.
Red letter edition.
These are the words of Jesus Christ, and they're some of the most frightening words ever spoken. And he's directing them towards those that lead the little ones astray, as you just said. Now you said it's not just Justice Kennedy.
But,
That's right. But he's a leader, and he's towards the top.
He's the poster child for it.
And he takes responsibility for everybody he affects. And that's a lot of people across this country and around the world.
Because he sets law. And,
he does.
And law has an impact throughout culture beyond what we even consider. Because it sets precedent. The philosophers come up with ideas, but most people don't hang around philosophers. Philosophers come up with ideas that are then implemented into law, and then justices rule. They adjudicate based on that law.
And now I want to contrast Justice Kennedy with Katy Perry.
She's not a justice.
She's not a philosopher. She's not a justice.
No, she's an artiste.
She is.
Yes.
I think we need to do this. I want people to think about this for a moment because it gives us food for thought. Katy Perry was condemned by Ken Ham for her performance at the Super Bowl this year. And rightly so. She brought out her lesbian piece, which is a big, big hit 4 or 5 years ago.
I Kissed the Girl.
Yeah, where she's encouraging little 13-year-old teeny boppers to be lesbians. The point is, she has broken this thing out of the closet. She's taken it mainstream. And here's the question I want to ask. Who's more culpable and who has more influence? Katy Perry or Justice Kennedy? It's a good question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't have an immediate answer for this.
Culpability, everybody is culpable.
Sure. But in terms of influence, think about this. Yeah. I don't have an immediate answer, Bill. I think, a lot of Bill's, obviously the political leaders of this country set the entire. Are you sure?
Because political opinion is
cultural leaders. Cultural leaders are much more powerful than they were in the 1840s.
You know, it goes back to what Francis Schaeffer talked about when he's kind of the grandfather of worldview thinking. He's the father of modern day worldview thinking anyway. And Francis Schaeffer said that the philosophers do come up with the ideas, but they're conveyed to the culture through artists. Mm-hmm. The artists lead the culture.
They mainstream them.
If you want to know where the culture is headed, look at the art that's being produced today. Yeah. Now, that should make us quake and tremble and shiver with when you look at the state of art.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you're right. Katy Perry has much more influence in the popular realm than a Justice Kennedy does.
Does the average person say, I think in this homosexuality thing's a good idea? Because Justice Kennedy said this. I have a quote that he... Or are they saying, are they hanging out with Katy Perry? They've got their iPod going.
Right.
They're rocking out to Kiss the Girl. It's kind of the cool. It's kind of the latest. It's kind of the fad. No. The masses are swayed by the demonic influence that the supernatural demonic influence that fills
people like Katy Perry, who can touch the lives of
tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people around the globe.
And she's a Christian. She's cool.
Yeah, she was a Christian. She says she was a Christian.
She was a Christian.
Yeah, she uses the past tense. But whatever the case. And by the way, the apostates do the best job at this. Get my book, Apostate, to understand how these cultural leaders typically raised in a Christian background. A lot of times. Nietzsche, son of a Lutheran pastor. Anyway, in just a moment, friends, we want to take a break and we want to take up the remainder of the program with a very important cultural impacting moment that will happen on Valentine's Day this year.
You got me a card.
This is the most anticipated motion picture of the year.
Oh, I thought maybe you got me a box of chocolate.
Nope. The most anticipated motion picture of the year coming up next.
Mama says that life's like a box of chocolate.
We'll be back in just a minute. The mark of a good father, according to Jesus in Matthew 7:11, is that he knows how to give good gifts to his children. He would not give his child a stone or a serpent. He would give him that which is nutritious and helpful. Now, Christian parents, if you're like me, you are constantly on the search for good gifts for your children. You're probably tired of cheap China junk and expensive toys that break within a month or two. That's why the Generation staff has spent the last 6 months scouring magazines, checking out samples, interviewing Christian parents, and identifying the very best books for our children. We look for creative presentation, substantive messages, biblical integrity, identifiable characters, and riveting stories. We have sponsored a child picture book contest called Nurturing Little Hearts, and we begin to publish the very best of children's books over the next year or two. But find good gifts for your children. That's a really good thing. We have an entire new section of children's book selections at our website for good gifts that you can get for your kids. Find it at generationswithvision.com. That's generationswithvision.com. And we're back on the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, back in studio with me. Time, year 2015, and Friends, the most anticipated movie of 2015, is coming out. And I know because I've read headlines about this thing for the last year and a half.
You're talking about SpongeBob SquarePants.
No. SpongeBob SquarePants. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. According to ticket-selling site Fandango, it's 50 Shades of Grey.
What?
The fastest-selling R-rated title of all time in its 15-year history. According to this, it has the biggest first-week ticket sales on Fandango for a non-sequel film, surpassing 2012's Hunger Games record. Huge. Preliminary trackings indicate the film could open upwards of $50 million in its opening weekend. The series of three gray books written by James, 51 years of age, I don't have her first name, from London, has reportedly sold over 100 million copies worldwide and has been translated into 52 nations. Now, Malaysia banned this film coming out on Valentine's Day, calling it too sadistic and pornographic for Malaysian consumption, but not so the United States. The UK Daily Mail calls 50 Shades of Grey, the movie, the raunchiest film of the year. It's set to feature more sex on the screen than the 100 raunchiest films released in 2014 put together. Now, I'm going to say
all
this.
All combined?
I'm going to say this, yeah. All combined. All combined.
You know,
the raunchiest than all of them combined. Put together, it says. It's coming out on Valentine's Day. And here, the first thing we're going to say from the outset, from what we know, and we're going to give you a little bit of background here in just a moment, not too much, but from the outset, we're going to say this. Whatever you do, friends, do not watch this film.
Excuse me? Yeah. What? No, wait. Kevin.
Yeah.
Kevin.
Yeah.
Hey, don't put that bean up your nose.
Yeah. Guess what I just did? I just increased the audience
by about
3,000.
Yes.
Yep. And why is that? I had to do it. I had to say it.
I just
increased the audience by 3,000 people.
You're
referring to the beans in the nose application of the law.
Don't eat the fruit of that tree.
Don't you dare eat that fruit.
Well, did God say? God said I couldn't touch it. I couldn't touch it.
Don't you dare. The mom leaves the home
for
grocery shopping. She tells the kids, whatever you do, kids.
Don't put those beans up your nose.
Yep. And guess what happens? She comes home.
All the beans are up the nose.
They're all up the nose. They're like 18 beans.
Sprouting.
Lots of beans.
Sprouting.
Yeah.
Bean sprouts.
This is what is known as the beans in the nose application of the law. And so the minute a couple of guys in the studio, a couple of straight-laced right-wing religious nuts in
say,
studio.
Don't
tell everybody,
see this.
Don't you dare see this. Guess what the fleshy thing in everybody wants to do?
Don't tell me what to do.
Fleshy says, I want to see it. Oh, it sounds really fun. Maybe whatever you do, don't see it. It will defile you. And the fleshy says,
I want to see.
I want to be defiled. I want to. Okay, so that's human nature for you. Yeah. Just a little bit of anthropology on this edition of the program.
You know, the book has been labeled as mommy porn.
Yeah, I know. I was at a Walmart about 4 or 5 years ago, okay? Friendly family Walmart. Mm-hmm. I see this rack of like 100 of these. You know how you get the whole rack? Mm-hmm. The whole rack is 50 Shades of Grey. I'm thinking, family friendly. I cracked the book. I must have hit the wrong scene. Either that or it's like every other page is bad.
You cracked the book and you went colorblind.
Oh, wait
right?
a minute, dude. This is appealing to the wrong side of the old Kevsky.
Yeah.
You follow me?
Yep.
Hey, you know how you have that.
50
okay, this is
shades
a little bit defiling
of
thing. So you're reading this porn and you're thinking to yourself,
So
put it back. So I didn't buy the book.
So Target,
I never read the book. I didn't buy the book.
You went to Walmart. Target. Here's what Target's
What's
done.
Target doing now?
Target has a whole series of products based
on
the 50 Shades of Grey.
No.
Yes, and
no.
Guess
ow,
what?
Ow.
Guess what? They said, well, we're putting them back in the back, not on the end caps, but on the back caps in the adult health section. Oh. And so there was a picture online showing exactly where they were in the Target store. Guess where they were?
Where?
They were next to the children's toothbrushes.
Toys. Children's toothbrushes.
Now,
you're like the
argument,
the little Bugs Bunny toothbrushes.
Yes.
Yeah.
The argument by Target is, well, children shouldn't be back in that section of the store anyway. Well, wait a minute.
Mom is bringing little Joey in to get his Bugs Bunny toothbrush.
Yes, and she sees the 50 Shades of Grey blindfolds and sex toys.
Some people are asking me, why in the world would we want to treat this subject on the program? Here's why. Because
we're telling you don't go to the movie.
Well, that too. But I'm on some evangelical blogs, and these Christian millennial women are gaga over this book. Like, hey, Christian liberty, baby, let it go. Let it go. Now
you're doing Disney's Frozen.
There's
come on.
Segments of evangelical antinomian Christianity
let
that don't like
go.
Kevin Swanson. You know what? Segments of evangelical antinomian Christianity, they don't like my books. They don't like Tattoo Jesus. They don't like my take on Frozen. They don't like,
I tried to keep you in the closet, duct tape.
I know you did.
For 3 months and it didn't work.
But I think these cultural issues need to be addressed. So let's take a look. At a couple of, number one, I think every Christian ought to say, you know what? Fornicating relationships are wrong. Shouldn't we be able to say that?
Yeah.
Now, maybe not every Christian saying that anymore.
No, they're not.
But I think you ought to say, hey, sexuality outside the context of marriage, man, woman, wrong, sin.
God's house, he sets
God's
the rules.
Mm-hmm.
He gets to set the rules.
Yeah.
I may not like the rules. I may be wanting to crack the book. So, you know, and go colorblind here, but that's not what God says. God says, here are the rules. You abide by the rules. It's good for you. It's beneficial. I love you. It's Valentine's Day. Here's my love note to you. It's called the Bible. Follow it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, we turn to 50 Shades of Grey on Valentine's Day and say, it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. I mean, it's between consenting adults. I shouldn't judge. Judge not, lest you be judged. Oh. Judge not.
Lest you be judged with the same standard by which you are being judged.
No, don't quote the rest of it.
Yeah, I know.
Don't quote the rest of it.
Okay, so, friends, a couple other issues that I think we ought to be aware of. Number one, or number two, we need to know when our flesh is being tantalized. And when there are presentations of photography and motion pictures by which the flesh is incited to lust. And this is all the way through Scripture.
You know, I tell students at Worldview Academy that going to a movie is much like getting married. Yeah. And the guys freak out. Say, I'm never going to a movie again. But seriously, I mean, you say something bad about my wife, I am in your face. Why? Because I've given my heart to my wife. Mm-hmm. Okay? When you go to a movie, it has the music. It has the visual. It has the dialogue. It has the scenery. It has everything that appeals to your heart, to your emotions. Mm-hmm. And once you give your heart to the movie, if anybody criticizes, you automatically come up and try to defend the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful to that which you give your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is an attempt to go for the heart of people, to the feelings, to the emotions of people. And you go into a movie And most people do not think their way through a movie. They feel their way through the movie. And they're living vicariously.
A couple other issues. The issue of shame and the covering of the human body is important. I use this example again and again. You know, a Christian sister or if your own sister is at a party and you know, you're just enjoying time together and fellowship. I'm talking about a Christian group. And somehow her dress gets unraveled or some part of her body is made open to public.
It's a wardrobe malfunction.
If suddenly everybody starts staring at her, all the guys just start doing this gawk thing. Everybody knows that's inappropriate. At least Christians ought to know that's inappropriate.
Right.
Looking after a woman to lust after in your heart. And it's not loving this sister in the Lord. The loving thing to do would be to either cover her or cover your eyes or turn away and just, you know, allow her to take care of the problem. Now, when it happens on the movie screen, I think the intention of anybody, if it happens, ought to be cover your eyes or run up the screen, put a sheet over the screen. Now, not many people do that, but you can do that if you want to. Here's one more thing I think we ought to be aware of is open conversations about the sexual context does compromise modesty, certainly within the marriage. Even if the discussion is a fictional character, it removes the act from the husband-wife context and degrades the sexuality. Think for a moment of the church congregation gathering on a Sunday morning, and somehow, accidentally, something happens up in the sound booth, and you get these cartoon figures even of males and females in compromising view. You know, they don't have clothes on, and it's just there they are, boom, in front of the whole church audience. I think that would be an embarrassing moment for everybody. The females would be embarrassed for the males, and the males would be embarrassed for the female. Are you with me here?
Yep.
Bill?
I agree.
Now, that's within a proper context, a view of sexuality where we understand that it's shameful outside of the realm of marriage. So it's our responsibility to love one another and to protect their modesty. And not to shame them, and not to violate Christ's injunction when he says, do not look at a woman to lust after her in your heart. Now, I want to talk for the last few minutes about experimentation with certain forms, because this is another aspect. In fact, this is probably the thing that gets the young millennials so excited about this film, because it mainstreams things that haven't been mainstreamed. And you have Christians defending this sort of thing. The idea of bondage, first and foremost, is something that I had no idea of. I was raised in a homeschool, you know, a Christian family for all those years, went to junior college at 17 years of age, and some kid is into this. Okay, so I run into it for the first time in 1982. And this kid has this relationship with this girl, and he tells me a little bit about it. And right away, I note that they're pretty dysfunctional. So I didn't really know too much about what they were doing, but I knew the relationship itself was dysfunctional.
It wasn't healthy.
It wasn't healthy. Now, here, from a worldview perspective, I'm not going to go into a lot of the details here because I don't think it's healthy and I don't want to create context in people's minds that might defile it. But I want to look at the worldview aspect of this. Number one, I've just finished a book written on the subject of freedom. I haven't told you this, but I spent 2 months writing a book. It's the most exciting book I think I've ever written. I'm just thrilled to death. What happened in Christ bringing freedom in the micro sense where he set the captives free, the slaves free throughout most of Europe. And then also the macro sense in terms of large, powerful empires coming down. So Jesus is all about freedom. If the Son will set you free, you will be free indeed. And you'll be free primarily from sin or essentially from sin. But there's other areas in which you are set free. Well, as it turns out, the modern world is interested in bondage.
Right.
They're body piercing, they're body mutilating, they're incorporating all the symbols of bondage, and they will tell you that it is. They are the symbols of bondage. They'll tell you that. They're very honest, they're very open with it. Now, that Christians would say, yeah, I'm all on board with this, is antichrist. That itself is antichrist, because Jesus came to set the captives free. And here's the second. Now, you can jump anytime you want here, Bill, but idolatry is a second issue here. Much of this tends to this sexuality stuff tends to get people focused on fetishes and focused on sexuality in an idolatrous way. And this is something you got to watch out for with some of this these modern forms of sexuality. Sometimes they call them toys and other things. But the thing that I think Christians need to be looking out for is, am I violating the commandments of God in turning sexuality into an idolatry? By the way, idolatry and sexuality
go hand in glove.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Prostitution, temple prostitution, very, very, very popular among the pagan cults. So we got to be careful about idolatry. Third thing is that bondage can also, and certain forms of experimentation can also take place in the realm of anonymity. And anonymity is a huge, huge component here in sexual exploration. It's antithetical to the God-ordained means of sexuality in the husband-wife relationship. Because remember, Adam knew his wife. This is the way the Bible speaks of sexuality. I don't think it uses the word sexuality. Always uses it in terms of knowledge.
Right.
Of really solid, intimate, emotional, intellectual, and physical knowledge all wound together. So this idea of anonymity, the world wants to bring sexuality back to anonymity.
Which is why the two become one. And it's intimacy. It's the intimacy. It's not the impersonal act.
That's right.
Intimate.
And modern sexuality depersonalizes the act.
Exactly.
Pornography is obviously the obvious character of that. These pornographic books do the same thing. The blindfold, I don't want to get into a lot of the details, but the whole idea of the blindfold, again, anonymity, very, very popular. They're always trying to move towards anonymity. Why? Because they find the biblical approach to sexuality of intimate knowledge being antithetical to what they're doing, and their method is demonic at core. And I say that because of Friedrich Nietzsche's master-slave morality that ultimately is celebrated in some of these forms of sexuality. Friedrich Nietzsche himself, I believe, demon-possessed. He adored Lucifer, hated Christ, said it in his writings. Some of his writings he attributed to a demon that had inspired him, and he names the demon as well. But Nietzsche attacks Christ ethics with a vengeance. Christ ethics of kindness, consideration, setting the captives free. The Jesus says the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over one another, meaning that the Gentile ethic is the ethic of master-slave morality. And that kind of thing is being celebrated in some of this form of sexual exploration. Finally, and this is the most fundamental worldview issue that I think we need to get back to, there is ethical confusion between pleasure and pain, good and evil, and cruelty and kindness. And that is ultimate autonomy. Listen to Isaiah 5:20. Woe to them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Obviously, the bondage, the masochism, the sadism is doing exactly what is described in Isaiah 5:20. This is the very depths of evil. When in the sexual situation itself, we have confusion between pleasure and pain, good and evil, light for darkness.
And this is paganism, and this goes back to earlier films. This is just the latest incarnation. I recall years ago hearing that in the Netherlands they would have open sex acts on the street.
Yeah,
and I was just shocked. That would never happen here, but it happens here. It happens in the theater.
And it's going mainstream.
This is the
most anticipated movie in 2015.
Yeah, you go
this
back
is
to...
blowing box office purchases right now before we even get to Valentine's Day. And if anything, boy, think about the confusion of hatred and love, pleasure and pain happening on
Valentine's Day. Mothers are going to be taking daughters to this, and that's the sad part. You go back to the Matrix films, the very last film in the Matrix series. Mm-hmm. It centered around three things. When the world was about to end for them, there was the sacred dance. There was this big mosh pit, a celebration, knowing that they were all going to be annihilated. There was sacred dance, sacred sex, and sacred death.
Paganism.
That's paganism. And that's what we're seeing here. When we elevate that which is to be intimate and a private between a man and a woman, between a husband and a wife, to something that is a public display, it's more than just mommy porn. It is the death of the culture.
This is Marquis de Sade with all of his evil promotion of torture and rape resurrected. Sade, Marquis de Sade, who, by the way, is the namesake for
sadism.
This is also sin, which is ultimately autonomy and purposeful confusion and rebellion against God's law order. That's what it is.
It goes back to what Satan said to Eve. Did God really say?
Yeah.
This is a gray area. Yeah. This is 50 shades of gray. God didn't really say.
Nah. It's a good way to put it. It's a good way to end the program. 50 shades of gray. Whatever you do, love Jesus Christ. Get to know the Lord Jesus Christ. Understand that he saves us from our sins. He regenerates our hearts. He makes us pure. And he takes us to the point where we don't even want to watch this trash. You notice I didn't say, don't watch this film.
Don't put that bean up your nose.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast. You can interact with the program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. Also, hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.